Welcome to episode 192 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat with David Fowler about his career at FIFA and his new challenge at MyCujo.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host, who is currently catching up on sports biz Slack messages, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, my name is Sean Callanan, and yes, I do check the Sports Biz Slack messages because that's where I start having conversations with today's guest, David Fowler, who was formerly at FIFA, had a long career at FIFA, and we've been going backwards and forwards, and he's a well-known blogger in the space, davidgfowler.wordpress.com. That's how we got connected to tee up this interview. So if you're not on the Sports Biz Slack channels, please join up. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/slack. And if I could do one more thing, if you've left a podcast review, I'd very much like to say thank you. We're now at 124 reviews on iTunes. I'm going to try to. I want to hit 200 reviews before we hit episode 200. Is that asking too much? If you have left one, I know how hard it is. It's quite painful. If you go to sportsgeekhq.com/iTunes, it should drive you to the right place. Just leave a quick sentence. Tell us what you learnt, how long you've been listening for, something along those lines. It's very much appreciated. I want to really jump in to this conversation with David Fowler. As I said, long-time Twitter friend, going backwards and forwards on all things sports biz, been a long-time reader of his blog, sharing insights on sports marketing and technology and where sport and how it's being marketed is changing. And he does that with the lens of his roles at FIFA in commercial and strategic marketing and then head of brand at FIFA. So we sort of bounce around a few different things and then we start talking about his new role at MyCujo TV. Which is very interesting from a football point of view and offers a really good product to not only grassroots sports, grassroots football, but also leagues as they're coming up. So it's another different play, and it's obviously talking about what Dave is really passionate about, the changes in sports technology and OTT in particular. So I hope you enjoy my chat with David Fowler. Very happy to connect with this man. We've known each other for a long time via the internet. I know him as David G. Fowler on Twitter because that's how I've met him. He has been at FIFA for the last 15 years and now is the marketing director at MyCujo. David Fowler, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Sean. Great to be here.
We were just talking off air. If people haven't yet changed the speed setting for Sports Geek, they might want to do it for this one. We've got an Australian and a Scotsman. So I think if they're on double speed, it'll be really tough.
I'm going to speak very slowly, Sean, just to make sure that I'm understood. I often get that feedback from people, so I'm going to try my best.
You and me both. Australians, notoriously, I find it funny when people say they listen to me at double speed because I naturally talk fast. So kudos to those people. There is studies that say if you're one of the fast listeners that you listen more intently. So hopefully people are doing that. It's good to catch up. Like I said, we've known each other via the internet, backwards and forwards. Your blog, your WordPress blog is one that I read and tweet out, David G. Fowler at wordpress.com, with your thoughts on sports marketing. So to get things started, take us back. Where did your career start? How did you find yourself in this space?
I started actually. I think the biggest change for me was taking a decision to do the CIES FIFA Master degree course in sports management. I took that decision back in 2004. I had been working in London for a few years as part of a sponsorship agency.
Yep.
And decided to try and open my eyes to what else existed out in the sports domain. And at that point, I took the decision to do that course, which took me on a very, very interesting journey. Most interesting because I met a great bunch of very curious, fellow, passionate sports industry well, not at that point, but soon to be sports industry professionals. And that really took me into FIFA. Through that course, I met several people at FIFA on field visits and doing various projects, and was kindly accepted through an interview process at FIFA by them, and that actually started a 12-year journey where I went through the ranks at FIFA and on the commercial side, from sponsorship to research and comms, brand, and latterly commercial and brand strategy as the head of strategy and intelligence. So it was a great journey.
So, I mean, yeah, so it is like, and in, you know, in internet years, they go faster than dog years. So we're talking like 2005 is when you started at FIFA in multiple roles around marketing and commercial. And, you know, FIFA is this massive global organization, and you're working in that space as the world of digital and TV rights and the whole landscape starts to change. What was it like being in a big organization that, you know, had, you know, the methods that it did, and it did very well, you know, the traditional TV deals and signage and all of those things that are traditional sports marketing, and how the landscape started to change with digital and social? What was it like, you know, inside the beast that is FIFA?
Yeah, it certainly is a beast. There is a real appetite at FIFA to be a leader in the digital space, and that's I think that's something that we will see in the coming years bear fruit. Inevitably, FIFA and many big sports organizations are in some ways, in my view, victims of their own success. The old days of media-driven sponsorship deals, where FIFA was very successful in the kind of early 2000s, bringing in big brands and indeed convinced many big brands to sort of stay with them for longer term durations, and that's somehow that comfort zone somehow may have played its part in, let's say, a lack of real appetite to evolve and innovate. And this is obviously not only a problem at an organization like FIFA, but I think it's a very common problem across.
But it is on that at that major event scale. I think, you know, FIFA with the World Cup, with the Olympics, you know, having the 4-year cycles, you're not in the same position that the leagues that are still big, but they can be more nimble because they've got this year-on-year, week-on-week, you know, test and learn, try new things. But it's just a different scale when you get to that, you know, FIFA Olympics, that it's really hard to say what's the next 4 years going to be like when you look at the rate of change that's coming through every single year. And we always, you know, we've discussed previously that the lawyers and the rights holders and all of that are trying to catch up with the technology, and you're constantly playing catch up.
No, I think you're spot on, Sean, because that's something maybe it's not so related to size, that this challenge of innovation, but you look at an organization like UEFA who have created this magnificent property called the Champions League, yep. And that's actually their source of innovation and change, and that almost drives the organization forward to experiment and reach new heights. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I think the problem is maybe less the size, although that plays a factor. It's actually this idea that in some cases organizations like FIFA and maybe the IOC, they don't have the benefit of regular day, week in, week out, yep, competition.
So then when you get to your last role at FIFA and sort of that forward-looking role of strategy intelligence, how do you put that lens over, I guess, that landscape, in that you do have those 2-3 week windows where you do have the world's attention, and it is the whole world's attention, but it is that shorter time span. How do you try to put that, here's the things we're trying to do, in that shorter space?
Yeah, I think a lot of what kept us up at night was trying to actually expand the window, yep, through which our broadcast partners and our sponsors could activate. And this is really the challenge. And I think now for FIFA, the new FIFA, the challenge is now to bring in new properties to innovate and explore a 24/7, 365 approach, which has been talked about a lot by a lot of organisations in this kind of position with one marquee competition happening every 4 years. This will be the key to the next phase, I think, of development for FIFA, certainly, and finding that formula has been a long search. But I do believe that with some of the new initiatives that have been talked about quite publicly already and being discussed, from women's football to elite club football, youth competitions, and many other initiatives, I think there's definitely a chance for FIFA to kind of enter that week-in, week-out domain.
Yeah, I mean that year-round, I guess, cycle of not just being a winter sport or not just being a summer sport. It's what we're seeing the NFL trying to do in the US, and the NBA is trying to do the same, putting different properties in its off season to extend the life cycle. It just comes down to content, and FIFA does not lack for content. It's just a matter of how it gets framed and how it gets pitched into the different markets, so you can engage people 12 months, because it is, the appetite's there. It's just a matter of how it gets framed for your fans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think it's all about knowing who your fans are. It sounds a little bit oversimplistic, but with the best examples of content marketing that you see in the world of sports, that they come from organizations that clearly have done the legwork in understanding who their fans are, and I can't overstate the importance of spending time to do proper segmentation work and understand who you precisely want to target. I think there's in the sports business, I've found some reluctance when you're dealing with competitions that have history and heritage. I've kind of witnessed some reluctance from people to leave certain groups behind, and by that I mean to make a conscious decision that you're not going to cater specifically for certain target groups. And this is not to say you don't want, you know, everybody to be interested in what you're doing, and you don't want everybody to be engaging with your content. That's more to say that you want to build your content and you want to build your core interest around certain groups to make sure that there's a good fit between what you're doing, what you're putting out there, and what they're consuming. And that's something that has been a bit of a battle in my experience.
I mean, it is something that we're seeing like the clubs tackle, and that whole, yes, here's our traditional core. They're rusted on. They're always following our team. But we've got to do other things to bring on a new generation, that, you know, bring in that younger fan, and well as attract a completely new fan. And sometimes, a lot of the time, those two groups are almost opposite. Like one group hates the content that's going out to the other group, and so it becomes a challenge. But it seems to me at least, to be a little bit easier at club level, because you've got that passion for the jersey or for the team, for the logo or the crest, whatever it is. How do you start getting that data to bubble up at that global scale of FIFA to say, you know, what is a football fan, you know, globally or in particular regions? How do you get that point? Because people don't love FIFA. They love their team and they love their country. So how do you get that layer of data and that information at that global scale?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question, Sean. I 100% agree with that statement. I mean, I think I'm sure most sports organisations are not under any illusions that the sports organisation governing bodies, particularly, are not under any illusions that they are not the ones that the fans are passionate about, and that's key, a key piece of insight to accept before you start the process of positioning yourself. And I think, to answer your question, for FIFA and for others in FIFA's position, it's more about an aggregation of across different teams. You're trying to obviously position the event and the history of the event, the heritage of the event,
yep.
and the prestige of an event such as the World Cup. And I think what the direction that FIFA's going in now is very much around in that direction, and trying to really bring out the stories of the history of the World Cup to a new audience. There's some great initiatives that the comms and marketing guys are doing at the moment to do sort of relive old historic matches of the World Cup through broadcasting on Facebook of iconic matches, and everything around the match is recreated for today's fans. So tweeting about the pre-match build-up, players being selected, injuries, whatever was happening back then, but in a kind of modern day context, that these kind of ideas are pretty cool and help to sort of engage and bring a new generation into the property
and into content and content types that are shareable. So if it is a father sharing with a son or a nephew, or you know a mother remembering her grandfather talking about that game, and then sharing it with her daughter, like that's what I mean. Like there's so much content there. It's just a matter of how does it get framed? Where does the OTT sit in this, you know, on demand? I want to watch it now. That's the piece that's exciting, to find out how, you know, who really and how that whole archive gets unlocked from a digital point of view, because broadcast can only do so much. But we've got so much archival, great stories, great history, you know, that's sitting there. How is it going to be unlocked? Is a challenge for when you've got that big archive of material.
I would emphasize again, you can get lost unless you really are laser targeted.
Yep.
At who you're trying to cater for, and the beast that FIFA is, you kind of, the temptation is to go for the world. That will never work.
So I wanted to ask you, I think, because I do believe that we cross paths via your blog. What triggered you to start to blog, and I guess scratch that itch to talk about, you know, where sports and business and technology and where they're all fitting? What made you start being a blogger?
It's a question I'd love to ask you one day, Sean. Maybe when you have
you can always ask. This is a two way conversation, so I'll ask any question you ask of me.
Do you want to go first?
I'm happy to go first. I started blogging to tell people what the opportunity was in the digital space, and it was a bit of a brand build, and you know, telling people, hey, look, this is what's happening in all these spaces. I think. What I did find is I'm a better podcaster than I'm a blogger, and so I've retired the blogging part of what I do. I don't write that much, and I talk. Now I'm going to go write a book, so I've got to figure out a way to do that, but I'm going to do it via talking. But that's pretty much where it was for me. I was, one, looking for content on the space that I was talking about, and there was pretty light on in the time that I started doing it. And so it was part of, well, I had to tell people, hey, you need a sports geek, or you need a sports digital person to understand the intersection of what's happening in the social and digital space and how they can interact with your fans. And, you know, we've seen an industry built out that are now serving that part. So that's why I started. And, you know, I was obviously starting out building out Sports Geek as a business and all of those kinds of things. So it was a business build. But for you doing it, and I, you know, while you were at, you know, at FIFA, that's pretty much where the question came from me of, was it just something you wanted to share, connect, those kind of things that got you started?
I think similar reasons to you, Sean. Many of your points there ring true for me. I also wanted to explore a little bit. Having a curious mind, what the next stage in my career could be. I wanted to sort of explore what topics that really interested me, and that I think if I was to recommend blogging for any one reason to anybody, I would cite that reason, that it really does. It's a great way to educate yourself and to help you understand what topics really interest and fascinate you. And that was the biggest added value for me as part of this blogging process. Obviously connecting with guys like yourself and people all around the world who slowly, I met another listener and I think, I don't know, previous guest, Baz Shnatter, was a previous guest on your podcast.
I know Baz, but he came to one of our meetups and we did not, yes, I know Baz, Baz from, what's AZ the team's Altmar. Name? He's at AZ.
AZ Altmar, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
So, he's a great example like yourself of somebody who I just got connected with through shared interests and eventually met him, now working in Amsterdam. He's Dutch. He's based in Amsterdam.
Yep.
Nearby. Anyway, we met face to face for the first time. So last week. So it's been a great journey in that respect to connect with people all over the world, to share ideas, to exchange. I would highly recommend it. I didn't really have much time to put out the level of content I wanted to, and I still, having moved into a new position, which largely was driven, the new role, which I guess we'll talk about, is a sports tech environment, sports tech role, and that was really my ambition, and that also was, you know, a nice offshoot of the blog. Yep. That this role really came about from my explorations and content that I was putting out around the blog.
And I think it's really good advice, and it's advice that I won't give now when I'm talking to people who are either in roles in sports or people who want to get into sports, or even in my previous life as a geek, I'd employed this it's a tactic, if you want to call it, but it's a really good career one if you want to, you know, if someone wants, you can always send someone your CV. But if there is a weight of articles that are there or of your opinion, like, it's far more compelling than any CV. And then I agree with you, the ability to make connections with the Baz of the world, or the, you know, the JW Cannons or those kind of people, because you're connected, sports biz Twitter is a really small world. Like, there's not that many people. And so being able to put some content into that space, you get known and you really don't know what the opportunity will be. And so, you know, I'm always, you know, I like the approach that you took of, you know, it's not like, hey, I'm doing this blog because I want to get a job down the track. It's like, I'm doing this blog because I want to share my thoughts and connect with people, and I'm really open to whatever opportunities there are. I think that's a really good way of going about it.
Yeah, it's been a good experience. But sadly, I don't have so much time at the current in the current months. But hopefully.
I completely understand. I can completely understand that. Like, when people say, you know, how long you do the podcast? I'm like, when I talk to them, and then I do an intro, and then I go back to work. So, you know, I'm not just doing an hour a week to get the podcast out. You did mention there that you finished up at FIFA, so it was 12 years. At FIFA?
That's right, yeah.
12 years, so three World Cups, or did you get...
I did, yes. So I was just short of Russia, which was I feel slightly sad about not experiencing this cycle right to the end, having spent so much of my time preparing for Russia. But yeah, three World Cups, three and a half, can we call
it? That's a pretty good stint to be involved with three World Cups. And now you are Marketing Director of MyCujo. Tell us what MyCujo is and what excited you about the role to come on board.
Certainly, yeah. So MyCujo is a football streaming platform, principally for long-tail content rights holders. So we serve the long tail of football, targeting anybody from local clubs, leagues, up to the top end of that market, which you would consider potentially a football confederation that has youth, women's, or a futsal beach competition that does not have a mainstream broadcast market. What excited me about my Cujo, there's a long list. I would say hovering somewhere high on that list would be the three letters OTT.
Yep.
I think it's going back to the blog, the excitement and buzz around this topic has been immense in the sports business. And although it's maybe easy to say those three letters and more difficult to explain what they actually mean, the streaming business was one that I was so curious about and one that I was so determined to get my head around, given that much of the sports business is pivoting towards this area. So I think the company itself, MyCujo, is already quite well established. So I think while we still consider ourselves a kind of nimble startup in many ways, we're already 37 people. We have a network of people around the world. Most of us are based in Amsterdam.
So at the moment you're are you in acquisition mode, whether it be grassroots competitions or state league competitions or smaller federation games, futsal? Like you're pretty much getting the whole spectrum of, if you've got open digital rights, how do they connect to the platform? What would be the steps?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Sean. We are in acquisition mode. We're already a global platform, well represented in most major countries around the world. We're possibly best known in Brazil, Portugal, and parts of Asia, where we have high-end long-tail content in those markets. There's a couple of other markets, Denmark and a few others, where we're well represented.
Yep.
We are relevant. If you're a football club, league, competition of any kind, then I would say take a look at the platform. MyCujo.tv is our URL. You can go on the site and apply to set up your own TV channel.
Yep.
Effectively. And the real USP for the platform and the vision of the founders, which also was an easy sell to me, is that we're trying to make streaming as accessible as possible to anyone with a simple mobile phone.
That was going to be my next question, because you know, again, if we go back into ancient times, you know, 2007 and 2008, when people tried to live stream, you needed a really massive rig and a computer that did encoding and you know, industrial strength cables to the internet. Like, what kind of setup, like, does a team or a league need to be able to be to connect to your system and to be up and streaming?
Yeah, so the basic tech that you need, you'd need a mobile phone at a minimum. Obviously, some of our partners will
upscale and have multi camera type setups.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yep. We have a dedicated broadcast app through which the stream is captured, and a studio functionality within that can through which you can edit the content, produce the content, so you can overlay graphics, you can tag highlights, goals, chances. So there's a kind of media management element to the platform as well.
Okay, yep.
You can share that clipped or tagged content to social channels, scoreboards, tickers, clock. So there's a very much a kind of built for football by football feel to the platform, whereas I think there's a lot of streaming platforms out there at the moment. There's none that I've seen that are actually built for football by people with a very intimate knowledge of the football business. So that's really what we see as a key part of the.
And so with every, so where's the. What's the business model of MyCujo? Like what does success look like for you, and then for your rights, you know, for your rights holders, for the clubs and the leagues and stuff that are getting on the platform, you know, what's in it for them? What's the both sides of the equation?
Yeah, so I guess on a basic level, the chance to connect with your audience, no matter how small niche they might be, on a larger level, there is a monetization opportunity, so shared revenue on advertising. We're an ad-funded platform.
Yep.
So shared revenue is the ultimate goal that we want to deliver for effectively for all of our partners. That won't be possible for some, obviously, on a lower scale. But
it's very similar to YouTube. You put your videos up, and you'll get enough views. You're getting some funds back. It's a well known internet model. But the thing is, the more important thing is that you're giving them the platform. But then as you get enough content, then you've obviously got options on how you might shape and repackage that content, you know, up, and you know, potentially be like people talk that the Netflix of sports. You could be the Netflix of football, and people could pay. Yes, I'm willing to pay $5 a month to watch this whole smorgasbord of sports. That's potentially where it could go. Yeah.
Yeah, there's actually the growth possibilities are varied, there is a real desire within the organization, and already much investment is going in towards creating more of a community platform.
Yep.
And this is where we see the future. The platform is built currently for broadcast. It's a window to the world for the long tail of football. But I think as we move forward, you will see more and more engagement and interaction possibilities on the platform, and the evolution and development of a community. And it's that engagement aspect that we believe is crucial to what the partners we're bringing on board are looking for. We believe it's what the football community who are on our platform and who could be on a platform are looking for. So that's something that you see more and more from us.
Well, I will, after this interview, I'll make an introduction to the guys at Futsal Oz. I spoke at the Futsal Oz conference last year. They're doing really good things around, I guess, all the centres they're building. They're having state championships. They're doing a lot of their own live streaming and having a lot of success with it. So I'll make the connection and see how my Cujo can help them get their content out there a little bit further.
Really appreciate that, Sean.
So I guess the last question is, you know, when someone's looking at it, and the Futsal guys are the same, what's the counter when they say, we'll put it up on Facebook or we'll put it up on YouTube? Because at some point that's where you're competing. Is it the football specific functionality and community and audience that's your differentiator?
Yeah, I think you've answered your question.
Yeah. Sorry, I occasionally do that.
No, one step ahead.
No, that's okay. But that is the piece that is where it is falling, because because Facebook is Facebook. It's obviously having, I don't know when we'll publish this, but it's having some concerns at the minute with its stock price plummeting and some issues around data and people saying they're deleting it. But that's where you're different to say, well, if you want that traditional streaming embedded on your site, that's what we do, and you know, give them that access to that.
Yeah, I think the USP versus a Facebook or a YouTube, clearly the types of audiences they're attracting on a platform are currently on a different level. What we can do is offer a much more contextualized experience for the viewer. So our player is unique insofar as we have the ability, you as a partner would have the ability to create a dedicated football stream. So with the scoreboard, with a timer, with The tagging possibility embedded on your platform, on your digital platforms, or shared on social platforms, and or on our platform, where we're getting significant audiences already who are looking for this type of content. I think that's something that Facebook and YouTube are not catering for.
Yeah, because they're just catering for that wider market. And I guess that's where you can, as a platform, start implementing some of those, some of the tech that's already out there. We spoke to Aviv, the guys at WSC, AI, analyzing highlights and doing automatically clipping and those kind of things that, as you get scale, you can be rolling them out to everyone straight in one fell swoop. When it's something that, you know, YouTube's never going to do a auto highlight cutting type service because it's such a wide piece.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where we feel we can add a lot of value to leagues and clubs across the world. Really, there's so much potential currently untapped, and we really are talking about a very broad range of content partners, potentially from, as I said, from the likes of the top confederations like the Asian Football Confederation, all the way down to you and I playing on a Sunday afternoon in our local pub team, and I guess that's where you probably get a sense of the community idea becomes more and more important, where this could become part of your football life, is the central part of your digital football identity and life, really. So this is something that you'll see, as I said, more and more from our side in the coming months on that aspect.
And so that's your charge as marketing director to get that word out of what MyKudu can do, get it into the right people and get that conversation happening around it as a platform?
Yeah, more or less. I think maybe in simple terms, my understanding of my remit here is really to bring in a kind of audience orientation to.
Yep.
The company has done a fantastic job to get on its feet with a sort of minimum viable product from a tech perspective, and now we need to think about who we're building it for. I think it goes a bit back to the whole audience segmentation and understanding piece that we talked about earlier. My job really is to start bringing their voice into the platform to make sure we build it for the audience, with the audience.
Yeah, because, I mean, you'll have things like, because it's a live streaming product, you know, what are the people that watch a full game? Who are they compared to the people that skim across and look for the highlights? They're a different segment. And out of that, products or shows or highlight shows, like there might be other products that come out of just your analysis of that data.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The opportunities really are almost infinite in terms of where the platform can go, and that's what really excited me in coming on board.
Well, it's been good to catch up. I wanted to go to the Sports Geek Closing Five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
Yeah, I do. I think my sports life in the early days was very local, so I was a fan of my local football team. Nothing glamorous, but it was.
It would have been glamorous to you.
Yes, it was. Yeah, seven-year-old boy, I used to jump over the wall at the local football team in my town of 5,000 people, and that was my football life. In parallel with being an aspiring player at the time, those are my abiding memories. And it's funny that I come back to the long tail of football, and that's where it all started for me.
That's good. You would have attended a few sports events in your time, especially with FIFA and multiple World Cups and maybe in different parts of the world. Do you have a favourite food memory at a sports event?
Yeah, I'm actually getting used to the bitter balls from Holland. I was lucky enough to attend a match here, and they are something special.
Describe them, because I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
What exactly are they?
I'm not even sure I know what I'm eating, Sean, to be honest. I think they're kind of like fried fried, deep fried balls with some kind of cheesy starchy.
Okay, cool. I'm so glad you said cheese and starchy. Like, I don't know if other listeners are thinking the same thing. All I've got is visions of Chevy Chase in Funny Farm. For the people that know that, Google that and the record that he obtained. I was getting a bit worried. They do sound delicious now. Now that I know what's in them.
Yeah.
What's the first app you open in the morning?
Feedly, probably on your recommendation. I think I think it was you who got me onto Feedly. Would that be possible? Is that something?
No. I might have mentioned Feedly. I've used Feedly before. I think other people have mentioned Feedly. Yeah. I'm a Nuzzle for a news Nuzzle, and I've just started using Refined.
Okay, I'll look.
Refined's really good in that it's a bit the same as Nuzzle, but it creates a whole bunch of lists around topics and people you follow. I'm finding those good. They're not the first app I open in the morning, but they're good news resources. But, yeah, I think you're one of the first that goes to Feedly as opposed to, you know, I want to get my news somewhere else. But that's fine. There's no wrong answers. Is there someone that you follow that you would like to recommend to the podcast listeners and why you'd recommend them?
Yeah, I enjoy the comments of Luis Vicente, who I think formerly worked with Man City and Valencia in the football world, and now in fact is doing some work at FIFA. I enjoy his sometimes in depth commentary on all things sports business, and follow him quite.
So where are you following him? On what channels?
LinkedIn and Twitter, I find him mostly.
Do you know what his handle is off the top? Because people are probably rewinding the podcast to catch his name again.
I don't, Sean. I don't.
You might. That's okay. So we'll get it, and we will put it in the show notes.
Great.
And there'll be a note for Jolly to check the show notes and make sure we get the correct Twitter handle. Last but not least, what social media platform is? Your MVP, and so normally what I'm going to ask it three. Normally I ask it twice. I'm going to ask it three ways. What was the MVP for FIFA? What's it for my Cujo, and what's it for you personally?
Okay, me personally, I'm kind of gravitating more and more to LinkedIn, and
yep.
I don't know why. I just feel. I mean, my interest in picking up sports biz news, that's my number one social media usage.
I've said it before. I think LinkedIn is, like, the last 2 years, they've done a really good job of, I guess, cleaning up and tweak their algorithm to bubble up better content. I think they've done a better job. Like, the feed is actually more useful, and we don't have the overall, you know, the white noise that Twitter sometimes can be. And the constant changing of what Facebook might be. If you want sports business, LinkedIn's the place to go. I completely agree.
Mm, yeah, and I think on the FIFA side, I'd probably say Instagram. There was some cool stuff being done on the platform by the digital guys. I think the lifespan of FIFA on Instagram is fairly short currently, but I think that's the platform to watch, in my opinion. We'll see.
That's what everyone said in the last 18 months, that the engagement on Insta, both on the feed product and the stories product, because they're two different products, are going gangbusters. So yeah, I'm not surprised. And you're also probably starting from a point of it didn't have a major attention, and so as your digital team puts more attention into it, it gets more momentum.
Yeah. I think on the MyCujo side, I'm going to say Slack for very different reasons. For internal reasons, we use Slack as an internal community tool to really share information. So it's not from an external perspective, but it's highly valuable to get to know colleagues, get to know what people are thinking, to respond and interact quickly with colleagues.
Are you all geographically in the same place, or is it across borders?
Across borders, yeah. Most of us are in Amsterdam, and we're still fairly small, but there are people in Portugal, Brazil, Asia. So, yeah, we're also dispersed in a way, so there is a lot of value to Slack in that respect.
That's why it works. That's why the Sports Biz Slack works. That's where you reached out to me and said, yep, let's do that podcast we were talking about. Slack's amazing, and both of that internal comms. I'd be really interested to see if, sort of like the way we've done Sports Biz Slack, if, you know, that if there's that community piece where Slack fits in that wider community piece. You know, their free model means, you know, you lose the messages, but, you know, does it fit or in that wider community piece, and whether they're going to play in that space or whether they're going to stay in the we're an internal comms tool, because there's a lot of people using it the same way I'm using it for Sports Biz Slack to say, here's a wider community, let's all let them talk. I'm a massive fan of Slack. Before we wrap up, how can people, if they have not already connected with you, how can they find you on the internet?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me on Twitter, David G. Fowler. I'm not really using Facebook anymore. I'm on a few other social channels, but I think, Twitter.
And most of the time you are David G. Fowler. You've done well to go and
I've controlled
secure that
identity pretty well. So,
Was there another David Fowler out there that forced you to use the G that you sort of shake your fist at?
No, that was my mum, actually. My mum tells me, she always reminds me to use my middle initial, so I kind of stay true to that.
Oh, well, that's very good. It's all about the personal brand, but really it comes down to mum saying, don't forget your middle initial.
It's all about mum.
Very good. Well, thank you very much. Good to catch up. Hopefully we'll do so in real life at some stage, but thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks a lot, Sean. Great to talk to you.
Download our Facebook campaigns guide at sportsgeekhq.com/FBcampaigns.
Thanks again to David Fowler. That's David G. Fowler, Fowler. And if you want to catch up on some of the things that he did blog in his time at FIFA, go to davidgfowler.wordpress.com and you'll be able to catch up with him. He's also a member of our Sports Biz Slack. So if you've got a question, like I did, send him a message or ask him in the digital channel and what he thought. And if you want to follow up on either his time at FIFA or on MyCujo TV. Just before I wrap up, just going through a few things that we've been doing lately. One has been a data acquisition project, helping a team understand where they're going to drive new leads for ticketing and season ticket campaigns, and starting to build out and flesh out their data acquisition strategy. So very similar to the stuff we spoke about last week with Tanya Galena in, you know, understanding the data and how you can use different types of campaigns to acquire new customers and new and fresh leads. But then it's not just acquiring those leads, it's understanding what you're going to do to them. You don't do something to them, but how you're going to communicate and how you're going to start their journey in your CRM. So we're doing a little bit in that data acquisition project and sort of helping straighten things up there. So if you're having issues around your data and what you do with your data once you get like especially new data, happy to have a chat. Just go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call. Lastly, I just want to give a quick reminder. In May, I will be in Queensland with the Queensland Sport and Rec. They've got some a conference in Mackay and Brisbane and Cairns. So if you're in that part of the world, Mackay on May 4, Brisbane on May 17, and Cairns on May 31st, just go to sportsgeekhq.com/Queensland2018. That's the link. And it should be good. I'm already looking forward to catching up with a few people who are in the Sports Biz Slack that are in Brisbane that are going to either stop by, or we might even have an impromptu meetup. Who knows? If there's enough people, I'll organise a meetup of some sort. But otherwise, we'll see you at the conference. For the international listeners, this coming Wednesday is Anzac Day, and so it's a big day, national day. It's national holiday. I guess I would probably say it's the closest thing that Australia has to July the 4th, an Independence Day. But it's pretty much looking back at and respecting. It's probably close to Veterans Day, but I think from a national importance point of view, it's more like Independence Day. Looking back at what our veterans had given and the sacrifices they'd made in the wars. So it's a really big day in the AFL and the NRL calendar with big games. I'll be there. It's one of my favourite days of the AFL year. I'm going to see my beloved Pies take on the Essendon Bombers. So, yeah, if you're an international listener and want to see what big day and big events come through, then check out the AFL and the NRL social feeds to see what happens on Anzac Day. There'll be a full MCG at Collingwood versus Essendon, and when the last stand happens, it is absolutely spine tingling. As always, please get in touch either via using social media or via email. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Join over 1,000 sports business executives in Sports Biz Slack. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/slack. Please share your fave episodes of Sports Geek on LinkedIn. Be sure to tag Sean Callanan.
Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources.
Want to chat with Sean? Book a time for a call. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.